necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Ready, Gary?
You ready, Mark?
Sure am, Gary.
Brett, are you ready?
Always ready.
Start us up. Let's go.
Call in now to be heard live on the Clean and Sober Radio Show at 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306.
Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio. My name is Gary Hendler. I'm with my co-host Mark Sigmund, and we intend to give you another great show today. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm doing even better that Brett is in the bubble.
Absolutely. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. And I'd first like to thank some of the great radio stations across America that broadcast Clean and Sober Radio. They are WWDB, Philadelphia, WWNN, West Palm Beach, Florida, WHFS, Tampa, Florida, and KDWN, Las Vegas, Nevada. So we thank all these stations for broadcasting this very important show.
It's so cool. It's so cool to carry the message across the country. And just to think that there, we have friends in Tampa, we have friends in Las Vegas and West Palm Beach and in all these different states that are listening, Gary.
Absolutely. Listen, I wanted to bring up something that's incredibly important to our community, recovery community. We are discriminated a lot of times in the legal system. There's an organization called Collateral Consequences Resource Center. And Margaret Colgate Love, who was my attorney during the pardon process with Trump, is the director of this. And if our listeners want to find out in their states what's going on as far as voting rights, as far as pardons, all kinds of stuff, you should go to Collateral Consequences Resource Center. And state by state, they'll tell you where you stand because it's different in every state.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about it every week at how tough it is for somebody that has, you know, had a drug and alcohol issue, maybe got some legal issues, and then they get sober, and it's like, how do I get a job? You know, how am I able to get work? And the cards are stacked against people.
Look, as you know, we had the former district attorney of Philadelphia, Seth Williams, come on here a couple of times, and after he got out of prison, he couldn't get an apartment or a job.
Yeah, and what a great guy. Seth Williams, we got to get him back on the air again. Great guy.
I spoke to him this week. Yeah, he is a great guy. I wanted to read something, an email that I received this week. If I can turn this off.
Turn the buzzer off, huh?
Yeah. I received an email over the weekend from Jay Trent Harmon. And Jay says to us, Mark, you and I, thank God for your podcast. I have listened to it continuously when available. Throughout my incarceration in the Arkansas Department of Corrections the past 2.5 years, the recovery resources in the Arkansas Department of Corrections are few and far between, so I thank you guys for your broadcast.
Doesn't that make it all worth it?
Yep.
I mean, to hear that this guy is in the Department of Corrections and he's able to listen to the podcast and get some recovery in there, which is not always easy to do when you're in jail.
Absolutely. You know, before we bring our guest on, who I'm very excited about, I want to talk about a little bit about addiction. And you know, we put this out as our promo that addiction does not just affect the individual; it affects the family, the community, and all sorts of things. And the analogy that I was thinking about was. There's a fire in your house, in your bedroom, Mark, That fire just doesn't affect you. It affects everybody in that house. And that's really what it is with addiction. And
the crazy thing is, you know, as a therapist, as a clinician in the field, it's so important to get families in because it is a family disease. And the crazy part about it is it can actually kill a family member sometimes, even before it kills the addict themselves, from things like heart attacks and stress. And it's so important to look at the whole family system and something that we call codependency. And that's where, you know, you might have somebody in the family that's enabling but also obsessing. And it can be multiple members of the family. And to get clean and to keep it, you have to get the family on board.
Absolutely. So without further ado, as they say, let me read something to you. When Heather Resnick King's husband, Taylor, was arrested for a DUI 14 years ago, life for the King family took on an unexpected turn. For 2 years, he attended, her husband, Alcoholics Anonymous, but wasn't really sober. We've seen that plenty of times. During that time, Heather started attending Al-Anon. Heather discovered that her husband was still drinking. Big surprise. But it is a big surprise when it's in your family.
Yes.
Taylor eventually turned to a fellow AA member who had persistently offered his help. The sponsor believed in Taylor when he could not believe in himself. And that made all the difference in the lives of two families. So this is how community plays in. The family that's affected and the community that you try to wrap your arms around to give you help, to make you feel that you're not alone. So Heather Resnick King, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You a little nervous? Everything's cool.
A little bit.
A little nervous? Okay.
We still get nervous 10 years later.
Yeah, we still do. We still do, but we try to laugh it off. So give us a little background. Where are you from, and how did you get involved? I read a little bit in your work in Heather's Way, which is your organization. Tell us about that also. And Heather's Way, as I understand it, and I know you're going to explain it in much more coherent way, you're involved in helping the whole family. You're involved in helping the whole addict. It's not just an individual isolated sickness. It's a sickness of the whole family.
I agree. That's
so
exactly what it is.
Tell us about you and tell us about Heather's Way.
Born and raised in the Philadelphia area,
yeah.
Out in Malvern when no one lived there, on a little farm. I guess had a normal upbringing. My parents don't drink. Far and few between. They're like, if they order a glass of wine, it's by the glass.
They're earth people, or normies.
Normies. Yeah. But that's what I was raised with. There's no alcoholism that we know of in our either side of the family background that I can trace back.
Were there other compulsions? Sometimes you see it as like there might be some gambling, or there might be some obsessive compulsive in the family, or depression.
Definitely mental illness, depression. I see that, and some anxiety on my side. But I had never dealt with the disease of alcoholism and addiction. I had my own baggage. I was telling Gary earlier. I don't even need to get into it because basically I had my own stuff.
Like all of us.
Yes. Raised in a great family, was sent to Baldwin, you know, to the smart all-girls school, where I never quite fit in because I was the more of the creative, and I wanted to fly by my heart and my emotions, and regular book smart was hard for me. I always felt less than. That was my thing. I always felt stupid. I wasn't meeting everybody's, you know, I guess standards for me in a school like that. Big athlete, really creative, ended up leaving and going to a boarding school. My trauma, my mother, I was told she was going to die. Didn't tell you this one. When I was 13, she had cancer. When I was 15, she got hepatitis, and I was pulled aside and said, your mom's not going to make it through the night. So I had a switch that I think I flipped, that I didn't realize actually until way later in Al-Anon, that I put up a barrier because I didn't want to be hurt. So I made really bad choices after that. I didn't get into the college I wanted to go to. I felt I was totally rejected. So I married a guy I met on spring break at 19. I had my first child at 21. That was the first addict in my life.
Interesting beginning of a story. Listen, we have to take our first break.
Sure.
We'll be right back. If you want to get involved with the phone conversation, it would be 1-888-329-3306.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma!
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Hey, this is Darryl Strawberry, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
Let's begin now. 60. I woke up this morning, and I said, you know, instead of waiting for a good day to happen, you know, waiting around the ups and downs, you know, I just said, look.
Hey, we're back, Clean and Sober Radio. Now, I love that song because it's a happy, upbeat song. And, you know, even in addiction, you know,
we need that.
We need it.
Yeah.
We definitely need it. Hey, let's take attendance real quick.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Far, okay. Judy Hansford, hello, boys, with two hearts. Do you know her?
I do not, unless I know her by her first name and not her last name, which is quite possible.
Okay. And then Nancy Minnick. Nancy's on my board. She's a fabulous, fabulous person. And she said, have a great show today. And we definitely will. Thanks, Nancy. Monty Mann, West
Coast, man.
Right?
Yes. He runs a podcast and Take 12 Recovery.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Everybody should tune in. He's our friend on the West Coast from Oregon.
Yeah, he's great.
Great. Yeah.
Judy Hansford, this is my birthday month, 33 years and counting.
Wow, congratulations.
Is that a birthday or anniversary?
I think it's an anniversary.
Okay, whatever. Mary Clancy and Debbie Reynolds are watching. And Monty says to us, thank you both for all that you do. You're not just a radio show and a podcast. You're a valuable part of breaking the stigma of addiction. Bless you both. Well, that's, you know what? That's a big deal. We need and it is breaking down, the stigma needs to be totally evaporated.
Yeah, and that's one of the ideas behind going to Vegas now and to Tampa, Florida, and across the country. You know, we got to get the message out to break this stigma.
You know, I want to ask your opinion on something.
Yeah.
I think anonymity promotes the stigma.
There's a case for that. It's a little controversial. I think that there's definitely a place for anonymity, but in some ways it can promote the stigma.
Yeah. Heather, what do you think about anonymity? Listen, we always say whatever your opinions are, they're not right and they're not wrong.
I agree with both of you. The addicts in recovery in my life are the most courageous, brave, incredible humans I know. And I tell my husband, fly your sobriety flag high.
Oh.
I think it's outstanding. So,
absolutely. You know, I know this would never happen, but we'll probably get a lot of flack for this, but Alcoholics Anonymous should be called something else.
That is not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I must say that's probably not going to happen.
Right. But you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right?
Definitely.
And there is a place for anonymity. The workplace, I get it. But, you know, almost everybody has been affected by this disease. And I think people are starting to understand they're not immune to what this disease can cause.
Yeah, and I remember first getting into recovery and being so scared that people would see me at an AA meeting, you know, early on. And after a while, you don't care. At least I don't. I guess, of course we don't, because we're on the radio talking about it, Gary.
That's right. That's right.
We must not care anymore.
Well, I guess not. I mean, I don't know if you've heard this. I've gotten a little bit of flack where you shouldn't say AA. Because it's promotion.
Oh, the traditions.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. My view of all this, and I really, you know, whatever you think is fine. I think the idea of these 12-step programs are to get you to stop using and get on with your life.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I guess we have to be careful with the 12 traditions.
I know
in
that.
Some ways.
But, I know that. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody's got their opinions on this. I mean, you know, we'll have to do a whole show on it sometimes and get some callers.
Yeah. By the way, Monica McNally Pocorny.
Pocorny, our friend.
Our Conchie girl.
Yes.
Is watching. She says, welcome back to you, Mark. Where were you?
Thank you. I don't know where I was. I think I was here the last couple weeks, right?
But no, you weren't. 2 weeks ago, you weren't here.
Oh, that's right.
You weren't here.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Hello, Monica. We got to get her on as a good guest.
Well, she's going to come in
cool.
with the judge.
Oh, so she's going to come in and we can get –
Absolutely.
And we'll have her name correct.
Absolutely. Well, we have it. Pocorny.
Pocorny.
Zachary Cooper, attorney at law. Good afternoon. Happy and healthy new year. He is our expert on a DUI.
Expert.
He is our expert. Zach, I hope everybody's well at your house.
I got one.
Go ahead. Who do you have?
Fred Kolzer. I used to play hockey with him about 10 years ago in my men's C-League. Awesome guy. But I think we should get back to Heather and her amazing story.
Yes, we will. But actually
oh, don't tell me.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We have to take another break. We've been talking with Heather King from Heather's Way. Heather, let's get back. I mean, you're the star of the show today.
She sure is.
I want to know what it's like. You're living with an addict. Now, you thought he was clean. So what are the emotions that you feel that you've been betrayed, that your house is not a truthful house? What are the feelings that you got when your husband said he was clean and he really wasn't?
It unfolded in an interesting way. So I told him I was going to kick him out. He got a DUI driving to pick up our son from the airport. I told him I wasn't coming to pick him up. I was going to have to go to the airport to pick up our child. And someone else went and bailed him out. Got home. I said, you either have to get sober or you have to leave. And to me, of course, that was definitely the rock bottom. That was definitely the low point, right?
Would you have really thrown him out?
Oh, I was going to throw him out.
You were?
Yes. But again, I thought that was the bottom. My bottom and his bottom, two very different things.
Yeah.
He wasn't there yet. I was. He said he was going to start going to AA. He did. I told you I started going to Al-Anon so I could infiltrate his 12-step program because I really wanted to get my tentacles wrapped around what was going on because then if I had knowledge, I had control, and I wasn't completely helpless. And that's how I was feeling, like totally helpless. So he starts going to meetings. I start going to meetings, and 2 years pass. And I know something is definitely wrong. I don't know what it is, because if he's working a program and I'm working a program and this is how our life is, then maybe we're not meant to be together. And it was a really, like, it was a bummer. I remember that night. I have a journal entry about that night. And the next day he bumped into his, now his still a sponsor 12 years later, at a nudies. And he said, hey.
Wait, can I just clarify something?
Yeah.
A nudies is not a beach. It's a restaurant.
Oh, it's a breakfast spot. It's a
breakfast spot. I was thinking another kind of spot. But anyway,
let's keep going.
Yes.
So he was having breakfast, and this guy walked in, and he was like, hey, here's my card. You must have misplaced it because you never called. And he's like, yeah, I look at that card every single day. It was sitting on his keyboard, you know, propped up. And he goes, I just haven't had the courage to call. That was the first day my husband got sober. And he went to two meetings that day, Narberth Midday and something later that day. I don't remember what. And he was counseled by his sponsor, don't go home and be like, I drank the Kool-Aid. I'm sober after lying to you for basically, you know, almost 2 years. He said, I want you to do 90 and 90 days, the gold standard. That's what he did. But by day 87, everybody in the mainline AA world basically knew. My husband was sober, you know, 80 plus days at that point. I thought he was going on 2 years. I was going to throw him a party. So they're like, you really need to tell her. So he came home, he told me, and it was, I went through all of those emotions, like in the grief, like I felt so many things, but the thing that was the most was back to my baggage. I felt stupid. How could I not know? 2 years, how could I not know? And I was like, God, you're stupid. Like, I was worried about trust. I was worried about all of this other stuff. And the truth was, the man sitting before me with 87 days was a different, transformed person. I couldn't be pissed at him. I didn't not trust him. I was afraid I wouldn't. I've never not trusted my husband since that moment. But I really did a number on myself.
Because that's a very difficult situation to be in. When you're lied to or it's not conscious that we would con everybody in addiction. But when you're, you know, put in that position, it's hard to trust.
I thought it would be. I truly did. And that was what my biggest fear was. I'm like, how am I ever going to move forward and trust him? Like, in those hours after he told me, that's what I felt like. Like, how am I ever going to have this marriage work? And I was afraid. And the truth was, he was a different person. Like, actions speak louder than words. I had 9 years of an alcoholic marriage where it was, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And then I'm like, oh, well, if I do this, this, and this, you're going to love me more and you're going to stop drinking. That didn't work. Al-Anon worked.
Al-Anon does work.
I was a different person by the time he told me. So
great. Yes, we have been talking with Heather Resnick-King. We really appreciate you being honest and open. It's not an easy subject. And we'll be right back.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure.
I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma.
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Hi, I'm Tony Luke Jr., and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio right here on WWDB 860 AM.
Hi, this is Randy the Blade Lurch. I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
Like you cued this up.
I caught you knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby. Can I have some more? Ooh, the damage done. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another man. Gone, gone, the damage done.
And we're back, Clean and Sober Radio.
Doesn't that song really capture, you know, I'm picturing this guy in his basement, you know, using dope and his family upstairs. I don't know if that really is what it says, but that's always what comes to mind when I hear that song.
I can relate to it. Can't you be in your basement?
Absolutely.
And
isolated.
Isolation.
The worst isolation.
It's the worst. It is the worst. Judge Duffy is watching today.
Oh, our buddy, Judge Duffy.
I hope you're well, Andrea. And I think she sent me the funniest thing about different ways people say different words in different areas of the country.
Oh.
It was very cute.
Well, all I know is the right way to say water is water, right?
Well, it depends where you're from.
No, and what's the some of the other
There's
ones?
There's plenty of them. How do you say Conshohocken?
Conshohocken. We got to get some of our friends from Vegas.
I got a whole list here.
Tampa,
we're back. Your story is really incredible. And as we were talking during the break, it is really heartfelt. I mean, you know— look, Mark and I are the addicts, so we're not the ones that had to deal with us. But it must be constant not believing, even when the person says they're sober. Is it really true? And you know, when you told the story about your husband picking up your son in the car while he was stoned, that's really a scary thing.
Horrifying. He didn't even get there.
Did that elevate it? Did that vision elevate your anger?
I mean, it was where could we possibly go from here? Mm-hmm. This has to be the worst possible scenario. I mean, I'm thinking in my head, actually the best possible scenario in what that was happened. He was arrested before he got to the airport to pick up our son. That's pretty messed up. But yeah, the truth is he didn't kill someone. He didn't kill himself. He didn't kill someone else's kid or parent. And that's when I realized my thinking was really distorted, because the best possible scenario actually unfolded. And my husband was in a jail cell and I was rushing to pick up my son from the security guard by himself in the airport.
How old?
9.
Okay.
Don't you think we lower the bar constantly? I mean, look, I've gone through it with a child. You lower the bar because you're grasping onto anything that gives you hope.
Absolutely. I mean, I felt like I was in a boat and there was a big hole and I am desperately dumping the water out and everybody around me is just dumping it back in. Nobody, like, and making eye contact doing it. Like, yeah, we really want you to, we want to help you. But they're dumping more water in and I'm sinking and I'm about to drown. That's what I felt like for 9 years. I was never able to get out of it, you know, and by then there were 3 kids. I think I want to say if my timeline's right, when that DUI happened, we had a type 1 diabetic, a kid who was just diagnosed, and a newborn baby. Mm-hmm. Life was pretty bleak. And the way I used to describe it looking back now, like, bad days were bad. When we get into fights, they last you know, days. Resentments would last for months. I felt like I was wading through quicksand.
Why did you stay in the marriage then?
I guess there was more work to be done. I don't know. I guess it wasn't. Obviously.
I mean, it's just a question.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I felt that there may be a better resolution. There was a better path. I mean, that's my enlightened self. I don't know. I was probably too scared to do anything. Denial is pretty powerful.
It is. I think a lot of, and Mark, you would know better than me. I think a lot of family members and loved ones that are affected by addiction think they can change the person.
Absolutely. I mean, one of you kind of described it during the break. There's this feeling that I've got to control this situation. I got to heal this person. There's also a lot of times what we call family denial, where some family members don't know how bad it's really gotten. You know, and I'll tell you, that's one of the things that we talk about with like this codependency. And can you describe that for us a little bit about wanting to control? Did it go all the way into your husband's recovery? Like wanting to control, like this guy, this is how he's going to stay clean now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, here I am going to Al-Anon regularly, like 3 times a week. And I would be, you know, oh, Taylor, so, you know, did you have a good speaker? What was the topic? I mean, yeah. I would literally, like, maybe if I got details, then I knew he was there, you know, or I would like, needle and try and figure it out. Like, just, it was, like, almost a drug for me. If I know what he's up to, you know, then I know he's going. But he was, you know, faking it until he made it. And quite honestly, so was I. I sat my ass in that room. I listened. I read. And eventually I absorbed it all. So when that day came and he told me I only have 87 days, like I said, went through a whole bunch of weird emotions, was just so upset and felt pretty bleak. And then it turned to like hopeful.
Did you have a network of friends or family members that you could talk to about this besides Al-Anon?
Not really. No one understood. When I went to family and friends, no. I was alone.
You were alone.
I was alone.
That's scary, wasn't it?
You were isolated.
Yeah, and they just didn't understand. You know, when I'd say, like, oh, you know, Taylor's working really hard on not drinking. You know, we went to therapy. We did a lot of stuff. It would get to alcoholism, and then it would be like, yeah, this person sucks. I don't want to go here anymore. And we would find another therapist. And it would always boil down, yeah, we had our own problems, but the root of this crazy behavior always sort of came back to the disease of alcoholism.
Did were you abused?
No.
I don't mean physically. I mean, mentally you were abused, right?
I mean,
emotionally.
I felt like I was from my teachers. So,
well, you had trauma from losing
trauma.
Your mom at 13,
She
right?
didn't die.
She didn't die.
We went to a break. She lived. She lived, and it was really weird. And when she came home, I did not want to be at home anymore. I was basically failing out at Baldwin. I had zero self-esteem. Zero. Yeah. I felt so bad about myself, and I was like, I can't stay here, but where am I going to go? All the other schools are the same. I can't go to public. I have learning differences. It's too big, too scary. So I actually I went to the library. I checked out a book on independent schools, and I started calling around and asking for brochures on boarding schools. And I applied to boarding schools, and my parents said, no, are you out of your mind? And I said, I need to not be here. So I advocated for myself at a very young age, not realizing that's what I was doing. And I didn't learn that until Al-Anon. First time I shared my story, quite honestly, people were like, wow, you're really resilient. You really had a lot of trauma. I'm like, what are you talking about? I come from a wealthy family where my parents are still married. I went to a nice school. I had a car. I had whatever I wanted. And I didn't realize that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That right. doesn't matter. So basically, you know, flash forward, my husband gets sober. Life is good. That wading through quicksand feeling has dissipated to I feel like I can't hold life in my hands. It's like sand, dry sand running through my fingers because the days go by quick.
How long has he been sober?
12 plus years.
All right, let me ask you, does he ever do something that you go, wait a minute, has he used?
Not used, but it's, you know, that behavior, you know, like golf season, lots of golf, a little bit less meetings. And I was like, you know what, you want to play lots of golf, then I want you to have lots of meetings because that behavior will pop up. But mine does too. I mean, I was crazy and I wasn't putting substance in me. Who's crazier? Think about that
one. I'll tell you who's crazier. The person that's not using who's crazy.
Well, that's sort of what I was feeling.
That's right. Because the family member, loved one, can become sicker, if that's a word, than the actual addict.
I believe so, and that's why I believe in family recovery.
Right.
You know, that fire in your house that you're talking about, I always said it was like a plane crash. Yeah. You know, and you have like the main fuselage, and then you've got like the stuff, you know, it goes like in rings almost out and out. And so when, you know, someone's like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's just your husband, he's the alcoholic. I'm like, oh, it goes so much farther than that. You know, you think about his business partner and his sister and, you know, his kids and me, like, and then it just keeps going out and out and out. You don't realize how many people it affects. It's anyone who's in that person's life every single day. Yeah. And we can all be codependent enablers.
How old are your children?
25, okay. 21, and 19.
So they get they know the whole bit. They understand it.
I was
did
very
they,
open.
Did they get involved with like Alateen or adult children of alcoholics?
Two of our kids did some Alateen.
Yeah.
Honestly, they felt like they almost didn't belong because there are so many stories of kids sharing out there that are, I mean, like really bad. And it made them feel a little bit guilty.
Were they acting out when this was all going on? Were in school and things like that?
They were pretty young. Okay. I do realize like my oldest, I don't think he wanted to bring friends home because my husband would rage. Like
embarrassment.
Embarrassment and shame. And, you know, that was a lot of guilt that I carried because remember at the beginning I said I got married at 19, had a baby at 21. I was divorced by like 23. He was an addict. He's still out there. He had three DUIs last year and was in the ICU like with complete like body shutdown. A wet brain, the whole nine yards. I mean,
so but, Heather, let's talk about this incredible organization you're involved with, Heather's Way.
Yes, I didn't choose the name.
Listen, you're very modest.
She lights up.
Because she's a little embarrassed with the name.
I am so embarrassed.
Embrace it. Tell us about Heather's Way. What is it?
Basically, it was an organization that was very organically given birth. So again, if you flash back a little bit, my husband's sponsor's son got in big trouble 5 years into Taylor's sobriety, got arrested, needed to go somewhere and work after he got sober. Nobody wanted to hire him. I said, of course he can come work for me. Like you saved my husband's life, my family's life. So Timmy came to work for me. I testified, we got him work release. So he was with me 6 out of 7 days a week at my flower shop. When he got out, he did not want to work anymore. I think there was a lot of trauma associated with that. Just being in a place when you know, going back and forth to jail, he didn't want to be there. He was going back to school, but immediately is like, I have another kid for you. So flash forward, I've had now 8 kids work for me that are newly sober. I require 30 days of continuous sobriety and they come work for me. We talk 12 step. They can clock out and go to a meeting. They can call their sponsor because I know that's the most important thing for them.
You're like the ultimate boss.
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's good. It's,
but I get it. I'm a mom, and I give them love with a distance. I'm not enabling their behavior. I give them a job. I give them some security, some self-worth, and it seems to work. So I don't want to help one kid at a time. I want to help a lot of people. It's literally the biggest privilege that I've ever had watching Timmy get his life back. Mm-hmm. You know, he's married, he's expecting his first child, he's given his life back to recovery. You know, he's running these incredible recovery houses out in Westchester. So it's like, I just needed to know, how can I help more than one kid at a time? I say kid because they've all been young men, but that's just because that's who I've been fed. Heather's
you
Way.
You get no women?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
It's just, I tried a woman who had 4 children, mainline mom, and before she could start working for me, she overdosed.
Oh, man.
She had to go serve like 3 days in jail, and she was on track to come work for me, and she called me after those 3 days saying, I'm not feeling up to it. I'm really sore. I literally slept on concrete, and I said, whatever you need. I said, the job is here for you. Take your time. And I didn't follow up because I didn't want to be pushy. That's not my thing. And I thought it was weird. I hadn't heard from her. And I like went to, I don't know, had a bad feeling, and I typed in her name and it popped up obituary, and I felt sick. And she died. And I'll tell you, I couldn't even tell you her name. I just know one thing. Her husband did not support her sobriety and kept her away from her children. And she had no self-worth. And
hopeless and helpless.
Yep.
So.
So Heather's Way.
So does tell us how that works and how are you funded and what is it?
It started in January. It's a great thing that came out of COVID. A lot of sitting around dreaming and scheming. I had wanted to do this for like 2 years. I was asked to sit on a board for something else. And they told me the mission and it was nice. And I said, but you know what? I have another portion that's important to me, not just supporting the addict, but family. And it's more than just putting someone in a bed in a recovery center or sober living. It's like what else seems to work. And what I found at my shop was a job and Al-Anon, and like people, you know, a parent figure that understands and giving someone the freedom to grow. And I trust in them. I give them responsibility. And obviously they're living in a sober living facility. It's a nice mixture.
Where are they living?
All the kids that have worked for me have been in either at home. A couple of them were at home, but most of them live in a sober living facility.
Is that part of Heather's Way?
We're funding scholarships. So okay. That's Heather's Way. It's a couple of different things. So we will pay for someone who's coming out of long-term treatment, you know, the 28 to 30 days. And as we know, the gold standard is you should go to a sober living facility, that in between. Yeah. So we will support you by giving 50% of your tuition for up to 6 months. We feel that, you know, a little pay to play, you should have some skin in the game. Giving it all to you doesn't give you as much reason to do all the next right things. In addition to that, we're offering resume writing. We have people who are volunteering to help us with this. Job placement. I'm trying to assemble like a safe list of employment options. There are a lot of people in AA that we're friends with that own their own businesses or have the ability to say, okay, I'm putting a couple jobs aside here and here, and we're going to overlook, you know, if someone's got a record or, you know, if they have a DUI and they can't drive, they can do, you know, data input work from home. So job placement, resume skills, helping you find the right job, and then the portion that's really important to me is the family portion and really expecting or pushing. And I know, again, it's a gray area. It's attraction, not promotion.
Well, no, but look, whatever works, that's, you know, whatever works.
I just
works.
Know what worked in my house and what's worked and what hasn't worked. I see the kids who don't have big, great relationships with their families, and I hear their grievances. And when they talk to me, they say, I wish my mom or dad went to Al-Anon. I wish they understood. You know, you bring a well person home and these families think, okay, well, I paid, you know, the $25,000 for you to go to rehab and then you're going to come home and everything will be great. But the truth is they come home at their best. They've done all of this work and they come back into this toxic house of people who are looking at the phones and looking in the liquor cabinet and sniffing, and like it's not subtle. It's because that's what I used to do when my husband was actively drinking. And, you know, he said, I got the hell out of the way. Like, that's one of the things he says. He gives, I don't take credit for my husband's sobriety, but I take credit for myself for getting the hell out of the way.
Letting go.
Yeah. And not being the one who was always pointing and, you know, you did this, you did this, you did this. I was out of the way. So if he was feeling pretty bad about himself and looking at himself and feeling shame in the mirror, it was because of his actions, not mine.
Great. Listen, we have to take another break. If you want to give us a call, 1-888-329-3306, and we'll be right back.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7, and because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY today.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma?
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Hi, this is Butch Patrick. That's right, TV's Eddie Munster, and everything is better with Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
Hey, we're back. Clean and Sober Radio. I want to show you this product. Mark and I have been promoting this. It's called SafeRx. It's a device you put in your house. If you have elderly parents, grandparents, or young kids, you put your pills in this thing. And then you close it up, and it locks, and you put it in your medicine cabinet. So if they open a medicine cabinet snooping around, they can't get to the pills. But it's not for somebody like Mark or myself who are addicts, because we would rip the medicine cabinet off the wall.
Absolutely. But for 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds.
It's a great product.
You know, because this is how this thing starts. People get the pills from the medicine cabinet, and everybody should have one as a parent.
Yeah, SafeRx.com. Check this out. And they're not expensive at all. You know, we would talk sometimes, even in long-term sobriety. You go to somebody's house and you wonder, what's in their medicine cabinet?
A little curiosity.
It's a little embarrassing to even say, but we all have that in our head, don't we?
We do. And, you know, it's scary because, what is it, curiosity killed the cat? Yeah. We got to be careful. We'll call each other if we get to one of these medicine cabinets from now on.
We'll sponsor each other. Mark, I'm in somebody's house. I'm in their bathroom. I just want to go into the medicine cabinet. Yeah. What should I do?
Yeah. I mean, I had a friend in recovery that I had over my house, and they didn't have a lot of time, and somehow they must have gone into the medicine cabinet, and somebody must have come to the door or something, because I came back later, and this thing was wide open. You know, like they left the door open, they left the whole thing. But anyway, that's a side note.
Do you have anybody on here that I don't have?
I have all the same people.
Okay.
I think for some reason mine stopped bringing new people in.
So did mine.
Yours did too?
Yeah, it stopped.
What's going on?
I don't know. There's something with this.
Something.
Something's up.
Something.
Brad, have you seen anything?
He's got this mini camera now for our listeners.
Looks
it's like the size
like a robot,
of
a robot. You know,
it does. It's like an inch long, and it's brand new.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
The quality is better, and so is the sound with that, right?
It's looking good. Yep.
It is looking good.
And we have a fantastic guest.
We do have a fantastic guest. Heather, you're doing a great job.
She really is.
Thank you.
I'm just so interested in the feelings that the family members have when they're living with an addict, because I really never lived with an addict. They live with me. And you know what? Something else I thought of, and I have thought about this. I never cared what I did to the people in my family ever while I was using. Never thought about it one bit.
Yeah, you were anesthetized from the feelings, right? And so a lot of times the families are suffering even more. What were some of those feelings for you when he was active?
Overwhelming sense of heaviness.
Do you feel any guilt?
Oh, tremendous amount.
Like
you
should have done something differently?
You know, you look back at some of the things that happened. I remember one morning he was out. He was out late. I think he got a ride home because he was wasted. And then he was pissed because he was running behind in the morning and needed to take my car.
Yeah.
We had three children at that point. Our daughter was an infant, like very young baby, 3 months. And he went to take my car. And I realized he had her car seat. If he's taking my car, he's got the car seat. I can call my mom and get a ride, but I need the car seat.
Yeah.
So I go running outside, and he's already late. And I'm like, wait. I need the car seat. And he, you know, pulls back in, and he's pissed. He's not. And now this is now what I know. He's not angry at me. He's ashamed of himself and his actions. And yet another night of drinking too much, getting in trouble. Kicks open the door, throws the car seat in.
Into your car?
No, into the house. And our little baby is laying on the floor, and that car seat landed probably 3 inches from her, and it was a big car seat.
Oh, my gosh.
I can see it had an impact on you. You're still, I mean, after all these years,
emotional.
Look how emotional you are.
Absolutely.
Which is good. It's good stuff.
Baby. A baby. An innocent baby. And did I leave? No. And you do the math. She's 19. She was 3 months old.
Mm-hmm.
Years went by.
And then you blamed yourself, right?
Of course.
And then there's a luck factor here, because there's a lot of scenarios like this where the end result could have been a lot different with the car seat, with the baby. I mean, anything can happen.
Anything. The DUI that happened after that. I mean, he could have picked up our son, and he could have crashed and killed them both.
Yes.
Or he could have killed our son, and then he was left. I mean, and would have been in jail with the guilt of killing a child and leaving a wife and two other children behind. Scenarios are endless.
And there is such a difference. I was talking to my youngest daughter this week. There is such a difference. You hit somebody in your car and you're sober. It's an accident. You have a level of alcohol in you. You're going to state penitentiary.
Yeah.
That little difference means the whole world.
Yeah, you know, if somebody gets injured. But so here it is. How did you forgive yourself? You had all this guilt and things, which, by the way, as we talk about in Al-Anon, right, it's like you didn't cause it. You can't control it. You can't, you know. But how did you actually forgive yourself and forgive him?
It's a constant. I mean, I still go to meetings. You know, I've been going to meetings for 14-plus years. I need to go to meetings because I'm an automatic negative thinker. My life is probably 99% fantastic, but that 1%.
All or nothing.
I look at that, I hyper-focus on that 1%, and I'm like, what can I do more? How can I do better? How come I'm not doing this, this, or this? And people constantly stop me, and they're like, do you know how much you're doing? No. I don't, because I see that 1%, and that's my disease, and I have to work on that all the time. Oh, I've forgiven myself, and I just keep doing good. I try to do the next right thing. What fills my tank is helping people, and I feel satisfaction, and it's a privilege. It's like really to help people in recovery. It's a privilege. We've opened up our house. We've had people live with us when the kids were little, when the kids were big. I still will invite people into our house. One of the kids in a recovery house relapsed a couple months back, and his parents didn't want to speak to him. They said, we're done with you. you can rot and die. And I said, well, he can't get into another house for at least 24 hours right now. And so I had him come and stay with us. The gratitude from that young man to wake up and have us give him a warm breakfast and a clean bed the night before and to not shame him for relapsing. I mean, come on. There's nothing in the world that you could give me that's better than that feeling of being able to help a person get back on track.
Yeah, giving back is such a big part of this program, and you seem to be doing an incredible job. So we really thank you for coming on the show. I know you were a little nervous. You did an absolutely fantastic job. I think one of the best interviews we've had.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're just an amazing woman and have gotten through all of this, all these trials and tribulations, and you speak very well on the radio, I must say.
So thank you for listening to us on Clean and Sober Radio. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please dial 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. To learn more about this broadcast, join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. Thanks for listening.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Everybody is a star. Who the rain and shakes the dust.